This is Taking Aim with
Rob Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. Our program today, Barack Obama embracing the totalitarian state. Friday, June 20th, the House of Representatives, Democratic Party-controlled House of Representatives, overwhelmingly approved a bill overhauling the rules on the government's wiretapping powers and conferring what amounts to legal immunity to telephone companies that took part in President Bush's program of eavesdropping. The bill cleared the House by 293 to 129, with near unanimous support from Republicans and a substantial backing from Democrats. Senator Barack Obama immediately announced that he would support the bill passed by the House of Representatives that rubber-stamped Bush's illegal program of widespread electronic surveillance and wiretapping. The Senate announced that it would vote on July 8th. The Democratic-controlled Congress thus marks a major attack on the democratic rights of the American people, justifying the crimes of the past 7 years in the name of the struggle against, quote, terrorism. We're referring to an amendment to the FISA, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, passed in 1978, the FISA Amendments Act of 2008. It was supported by House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, the Majority Leader Steny Hoyer, and 103 other Democrats who sided with the near-unanimous Republican caucus. The warrantless wiretapping program was initiated by the Bush administration after the attacks on the World Trade Center and the Pentagon. Previously, the White House had set aside the legal framework for communications intercepts. These intercepts were under the FISA court. The government was supposed to show probable cause to a special judge, a FISA judge, in this special court. As a result of the program of the Bush administration and its warrantless wiretaps, 40 lawsuits have been initiated against telephone companies who cooperated with the government. Ralph?
Well, Maya, first of all, of course, as we've long documented, what the FISA represents is a method of documentation within the ruling class itself. It's only the authorization is strictly within the confines of the national security state apparatus so that they have a record for their own usage. And what this does is to wipe out that record altogether so there can be no tracking of who is targeted. It allows for the utilization of these totalitarian measures, not just against the entire population, but within the ruling class debates and fallings out and differentiations themselves when they're squabbling over the spoils. The National Security Agency was intercepting communications by secret directives to the telecommunications companies who delivered their entire database of email traffic and set up special facilities for NSA spying inside their own premises. There was a whole section of Folsom Street in San Francisco, Maya, which was in fact an arena in which nobody was allowed in without a national security clearance, in which this vast electronic apparatus was in place across entire floors for monitoring and spying upon all email traffic, all telecommunications, and all contact between people. It is the most extraordinary. I mean, it makes the Stasi look like pikers by comparison. The House bill grants retroactive immunity to these telecommunications companies that collaborated in this wiretapping program, and these corporations have before them 40 lawsuits charging them with invasion of privacy and trying to elicit the extent of the spying and the content of the spying. This bill authorizes indiscriminate monitoring of all telecommunications, all email traffic in and out of the United States without any internal arbitrary FISA court judge to document it for the ruling class, although that information would be kept anyway from the targets. The FISA court will review only general procedures, namely anyone telephoned from a particular cell phone, but not the identities of those under surveillance. It's supposedly the original FISA oversight was to prohibit what was called reverse targeting. That is to say, if a, quote, terror suspect, unquote, calls a pizza shop, they cannot then just use the wiretap to track everybody else who calls the same location. Now, that's removed. That means if somebody is designated as having called Ralph Schoenman or Maya Schoen on Taking Aim, and that person is supposed to be involved in some resistance to U.S. imperialism, it's not just that, but our grocer and our candlestick maker can be swept up into the same thing if they have the misfortune of calling us. That's the meaning of this, brothers and sisters. And it's interesting about the typical role of Barack Obama. Last August, when the legislation to expand federal wiretapping powers under FISA first came up, Obama voted against the so-called Protect America Act, which granted a six-month authorization from the NSA wiring tapping. Last January, he was posturing in the primaries about stating no one should get a free pass to violate basic civil liberties of the American people, not the President of the United States, not the telecommunications companies. And then within a very short space of time, Obama issued a statement last Friday explaining why he has reversed himself. He accepts the war on terror framework laid down by the Bush administration, and he states the following. Given the grave threats that we face, our national security agencies must have the capability to gather intelligence and to track down the terrorists everywhere before they strike, Obama declared. He attempted to cover this embrace of the totalitarian schema with the claim that the latest bill is a compromise. The linguistic contortions don't conceal the reality. The illegal spying by the Bush administration is not merely because it has been legalized by the Democratic Congress. Obama and company embrace the legislation that declares the wiretapping legal going forward and retroactively immunizes all who violated the law since September 11th itself. And get this, brothers and sisters, Obama urges his listeners and his supporters that to understand that a future Obama administration will use this police state power more judiciously than a Bush White House. But he demands a blank check and indeed calls for even more sweeping inroads against democratic rights. He has embraced the war on terror. He has embraced the trade-off between security and democratic rights, so-called. And indeed, what he has done here is to make very clear that he has put himself on the path of embracing the police state, because that means that a Barack Obama administration will be even every bit as ambitious as Bush to have complete control over the political process in the United States, over dissent in the United States, and over an apparatus that arrogates to the executive and to the president himself unfettered power. The U.S. Democratic Congress has approved and legalized domestic spying with Barack Obama at its head. But it's important to understand something else. This is a twofer, brothers and sisters. This capitulation, if you like, or what it really amounts to, is an embrace of the totalitarian state going beyond what Bush himself had requested, represents a, quote, bipartisan cooperation for a war funding vote. They approved a funding of the Iraq war beyond what Bush had asked, paying for the present level of killing in Iraq and Afghanistan through June 2009.
Ralph, the American Civil Liberties Union warned that the bill allows, quote, a mass, untargeted, and unwarranted surveillance of all communications coming into and out of the United States. And what does the ACLU mean by that? The New York Times, June 21st, an article by Eric Lichtbau and David Stout, explains the expanded powers of the new Federal Wiretapping Act. The proposal that was agreed upon by the House of Representatives and will be rubber stamped by the Senate will expire in 2012 unless Congress renews it. And this proposal seeks to plug what the Bush administration maintained was a dangerous loophole. It allows broad warrants on large groups of foreign targets. In other words, it no longer requires individual warrants for wiretapping purely foreign communications like phone calls and emails that pass through American telecommunications switches. And we have to note that these switches, even international switches, may reside in the United States. The issue at hand is that it is an American telecommunications switch. The government now would be allowed to use broad warrants to eavesdrop on large groups of foreign targets at once. It doesn't need a warrant for individuals, and it doesn't need a warrant for individual taps. In other words, large groups on nebulous subjects. In targeting and wiretapping Americans, the administration has to get an individual court order from the intelligence court. But there is an exception, a broad exception, and that is called the, quote, exigent. In other words, emergency circumstances. Then it can go ahead and wiretap for at least 7 days without a court order. And all the government has to assert is, quote, intelligence important to the national security of the United States may be lost. This is so extreme that Representative Gerald Nadler, a New York Democrat who heads the Judiciary Committee's Subcommittee on the Constitution, Civil Rights, and Civil Liberties, called the bill, quote, a fig leaf, and one that, quote, abandons the Constitution's protections and insulates lawless behavior from legal scrutiny, end quote. Ralph?
Maya, we have to understand the context here. Bush's popularity is at an all-time low. The ability of the Democratic Party to challenge Bush on these issues is total. The public is opposed to this president. They have nothing but contempt for the administration. There is absolutely no impediment to the Democratic Party opposing these authoritarian and totalitarian measures. What they have done is to embrace the Nixon declaration at the time of Watergate that if the president orders it, it becomes legal. That is to say, legality is a function of the arbitrary determination of the king or the head of state. The bill is the most sweeping overhaul of surveillance laws in 30 years. It was submitted to a vote 24 hours after a deal was struck between the White House and the Democratic congressional leadership. There were no hearings. There was no debate. After months of secret negotiations, it's a replay of the Patriot Act, brothers and sisters. Most of these people who voted on it had not merely debated it, they hadn't even read it. It's precisely the role that has been arrogated to this so-called legislative branch. It is an enabling instrument, this millionaire's club. And that is indeed what is at work here. That is what is meant by a bipartisan policy. The Attorney General can declare any evidence of such authorization for this spying and arbitrarily declare a terrorist connection and then declare it secret. The plaintiffs in cases cannot even learn why a lawsuit was dismissed. What these measures do is to strengthen the dictatorial powers that the Bush administration has declared are essential to allow the president to recruit private corporations to carry out illegal acts with impunity. Now, that marriage between private corporations, whether it's Blackwater or the mercenary apparatus or the enforcement apparatus of the intelligence services, is in fact the specific sociological content of the fascist state. The Democratic Party leadership is as determined as the Republicans to defend the interests of the corporate capitalist class, which has a great stake in this complete arbitrary and totalitarian control over political life in the country. The telecommunications industry, like most of large corporate business, has been now sending the lion's share of its campaign contributions to the Democratic Party and to Democratic Party candidates. Barack Obama got five times as much as McCain from the telecommunications industry, five times as much. The most telecommunications cash was given to Senator Jay Rockefeller, the chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee, the key architect of this bill. You got the picture, brothers and sisters?
Ralph, last year when Congress had passed the Protect America Act, which was the temporary continuation of this wiretapping legislation, the protection of the administration for its wiretapping, the population of the United States, particularly the Democratic Party rank and file, flooded Congress, particularly flooded House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's office with letters, emails, everything to say, we don't want this provision. And Pelosi's office received, reportedly, more than 200,000 angry emails. So the Democratic Party leadership is passing this legislation over the will, despite the will of its own rank-and-file party members. Senator Russ Feingold, the Democrat from Wisconsin, who considers himself to be a strong constitutionalist, termed the new bill not a compromise, it's a capitulation. And the Republican Party leadership has said that President Bush got more than what he had hoped to get. This is the remark of Senator Christopher Bond, the Republican of Missouri, who led the negotiations with the Democratic Party. Quote, I think the White House got a better deal than even they had hoped to get. A key part of this new legislation is titled Protection of Persons Assisting the Government. This assures the wholesale dismissal of the pending lawsuits, the 40 lawsuits, by retroactively legalizing the telecom's participation in and abetting of illegal government acts. It establishes that no company or individual can be sued, quote, for providing assistance to an element of the intelligence community, quote, and merely requires the U.S. Attorney General to affirm that the illegal action was, quote, authorized by the president, end quote, and, quote, designed to prevent or detect a terrorist attack.
Maya, we have to look carefully at what the Democratic Congress and Obama and company have done here. It's not merely that they have sanctioned, in a degree that Bush did not even ask, the totalitarian state. But Obama's statement is extremely instructive. He stated that a future Obama administration will exercise this arbitrary police state power with great abandon. I will take any additional steps I deem necessary, stated Barack Obama. It amounts to a blank check and will just be deployed to justify ever more sweeping inroads against democratic rights. Barack Obama has embraced the war on terror. He has embraced the claim that these arbitrary totalitarian measures are the prerequisite of security. And he has stated that the Bush administration is only the little beginning, that his own administration will embrace this apparatus. Now, as the World Socialist website put it, Osama bin Laden cannot overthrow the Constitution and the Bill of Rights and establish a police state in the United States. Of course they can't, since this was an inside job. Osama bin Laden has nothing to do with the events of September 11th. But leaving that aside, they correctly state, only an American president and an American general can do that at the head of a military intelligence apparatus that absorbs already officially over $700 billion a year, more than the combined armies of every other country in the world. Let's understand what this represents, brothers and sisters. It is the embrace by the Democratic Party and Barack Obama of the architecture of the fascist state.
And now, where does it all stand? Aside from giving a blank slate to the National Security Administration to wiretap, we have here the lawsuits, the 40 lawsuits going before Judge Vaughn Walker of the California Northern District, where the government will provide paperwork and he will be given leeway to decide if the program was legal, based upon documentation that he receives from the Attorney General. We want to discuss today on Taking Aim important documents that are the basis of these lawsuits. And you have to thank Wired.com, because Wired.com published the report of Klein, of one of the people who worked at AT&T, who disclosed this this secret program. An investigative reporter, Ryan Singel, through an anonymous source who was close to the litigation, also received the documents, and Wired.com made them available on its internet site, 30 pages, and with an affidavit that had been attributed to Klein. And this is Mark Klein, who was a retired AT&T engineer. And he had stepped forward with the technical documents that are at the heart of the anti-wiretapping case against AT&T, a case that was later extended to Verizon and the other major telecommunications company. Ralph?
Well, this is a very important whistleblowing revelation. The AT&T whistleblower, the spy bill creates the infrastructure for a police state, is Ryan Singel's article in Wired. And Mark Klein, who you rightly cite, the retired AT&T engineer who came forward with the technical documents exposing the actual documented plans, he is beside himself over the Senate vote, and he stated the following. The Democratic leadership is touting this as a compromise, but they've endorsed the infamous Nuremberg defense. Just follow orders. The judge can only check their paperwork. It's a cynical deal, an exercise in deceit and cowardice, Ryan Singel spells out. Klein describes a network monitoring room built in AT&T's Internet Switching Center that only NSA-approved techs can access. He squirreled away documents, and then he presented them to the press and to the Electronic Frontier Foundation. And Wired.com acquired these documents, and has which are under court seal, and published the wiring documents. They are available. We have them. The lawsuit that resulted from this document is waiting in the Ninth U.S. Appeals Court, and that is exactly what has been ruled a state secret. And, of course, they are squelching the disclosure of these totalitarian documents and the processes that they involve.
Today on Taking Aim, we're going to read as much as possible of these documents, and I suggest you go to the internet and you can find it under a search, AT&T's Implementation of NSA Spying on American Citizens. And these are the documents published by Wired, written by Mark Klein. He wrote it January 16th, 2004. And on December 31st, 2005, Mark Klein stated, I wrote the following document in 2004 when it became clear to me that AT&T, at the behest of the National Security Agency, had illegally installed secret computer gear designed to spy on internet traffic. At the time, I thought this was an outgrowth of the notorious Total Information Awareness Program, which was attacked by defenders of civil liberties. But now it's been revealed by the New York Times that the spying program is vastly bigger and was directly authorized by President Bush, as he himself has now admitted, in flagrant violation of specific statutes and constitutional protections for civil liberty. Liberties. I am presenting this information to facilitate the dismantling of this dangerous Orwellian project. Those are the words of Mark Klein, and they are the introduction to his document of January 16th, 2004, AT&T deploys government spy gear on World Net Network. Ralph?
It is an extraordinary document, brothers and sisters. It is a blueprint of the totalitarian state. In 2003, it states, AT&T built secret rooms hidden deep in the bowels of its central offices in many cities across the country, housing computer gear for a government spy operation which taps into the company's world net service and the entire internet. These installations enable the government to spy upon every individual message on the internet, analyze exactly what people are doing. Documents showing the hardwire installation in San Francisco indicate that there are similar locations installed in numerous cities. The physical arrangement, the timing of its construction, the government-imposed secrecy surrounding it all strongly indicate that its origins are rooted in the Defense Department's Total Information Awareness Program. See, this is nominally scuttled, right? But here's the, in fact, the New York Times wrote, as director of the effort, Vice Admiral John M. Poindexter described the system in Pentagon documents, providing intelligence analysts and law enforcement officials with instant access to information from internet, email, calling records, credit cards, banking transactions, and travel documents without a search warrant. Now, DARPA was supposedly modifying these processes, but in fact, secretly, that's exactly what they were implementing under the cover of protected authority.
To go back to Klein's document, the DARPA changed the name, DARPA changed the name of the program to, quote, Terrorism Information Awareness, to make it more politically palatable. But feeling the heat, Congress made a big show of allegedly cutting off funding for TIA in late 2003, and the political fallout resulted in Admiral Poindexter's abrupt resignation last August. That's talking about in 2003. In San Francisco, the secret room is room 641A at 611 Folsom Street, the site of a large SBC phone building, three floors of which are occupied by AT&T. High-speed fiber optic circuits come in on the eighth floor and run down to the seventh floor, where they connect to routers for AT&T's WorldNet service, part of the latter's vital common backbone. In order to snoop on these circuits, a special cabinet was installed and cabled to the secret room on the sixth floor to monitor the information going through the circuits. The location code of the cabinet is 070177.04, which denotes the 7th floor, aisle 177, and bay 04. The secret room itself is roughly 24 by 48 feet, containing perhaps a dozen cabinets, including such equipment as Sun, that's the Sun Microsystems company, and two Juniper routers, plus an industrial-size air conditioner. The normal workforce of unionized technicians in the office are forbidden to enter the secret room, which has a special combination lock on the main door. The telltale sign of an illicit government spy operation is the fact that only people with security clearance from the National Security Agency can enter this room. In practice, writes Klein, this has meant that only one management-level technician works in there. Ironically, the one who set up the room and was laid off in late 2003 in one of the company's endless downsizing, but he was quickly replaced by another. Plans for the secret room were fully drawn up by December 2002, curiously only 4 months after DARPA started awarding contracts for TIA. And Klein points to a 60-page document that was identified as coming from AT&T Labs Connectivity and Net Services and authored by the lab's consultant, Matthew Casamassina, and it's entitled Study Group 3 LGX Splitter Wiring, San Francisco, and is dated December 10th, 2002.
Maya, this document addresses the special problem of spying on fiber optic circuits. Unlike copper wire circuits, which emit electromagnetic fields that can be tapped into without disturbing the circuits, fiber optic circuits do not leak their light signals. To monitor these communications, one has to physically cut into the fiber and divert a portion of the light signal. This problem is solved with splitters, which literally split off a percentage of the light signal so it can be examined. Now, what's instructive about this is that this introduces problems since the signal level is reduced by the splitter. Its only purpose is to enable a third party to examine the data flowing. So what do? They provide a diagram showing the splitting of the light signal, a portion of which is diverted to an SG3 secure room, the so-called study group spy room. Then another page headlight, the cabinet naming, lists not only the splitter cabinet, but the equipment installed. Now, a lot of this is technical, brothers and sisters, but the essence of it is that they are deploying the most advanced electronic mechanisms for establishing interlocking communication systems across the United States. Since the San Francisco secret room is numbered 3, it is clear that there are several more cities in the proximity: Seattle, San Jose, Los Angeles and San Diego, and others that are now spread across the United States.
This is Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. Our program today, Barack Obama, Embracing the Totalitarian State. Ralph?
One of the devices in the cabinet naming list is particularly revealing as to the purpose of the secret room, a Naris STA-6400. Now, Naris is a seven-year-old company which, because of its particular niche, appeals not only to corporate capital, but is backed by AT&T, J.P. Morgan, and Intel, among others. It is also tied to police, military, and intelligence agencies in the United States. Last November, Naris was the lead sponsor for a technical conference in McLean, Virginia, entitled Intelligence Support Systems for Lawful Interception and Internet Surveillance. The FBI, the DEA, the major telecommunications company, the Central Intelligence Agency colluded here in a national plan. Among these attendees were AT&T, Bell South, MCI, Sprint, and Verizon. The keynote speech was given by NARIS's founder, Dr. Ori Cohen. And so what indeed does NARIS STA-6400 do? It consists of platforms, standalone traffic analyzers. They collect network and customer usage information in real time. The analyzers sit on the message and pipe it into an internet service provider. And then they boast in a press release that their semantic traffic analysis captures comprehensive customer, that is to say, popular usage, and transforms it into actionable information. Now, what do we mean here by actionable information, brothers and sisters? What do you think the Military Intelligence Act is all about? What do you think Northern Command is all about? What do you think allocating every city within 200 miles of the coastline to the jurisdiction of the military is all about? What do you think the designation to Halliburton subsidiaries and Kellogg Brown Root of setting up detention camps across the United States is all about? This is the link, brothers and sisters. They monitor you, they control the information, they target people throughout the United States, and there is a link, and that link is detention. That link is martial law. That link is the totalitarian state.
Ralph, I want to repeat that what we're doing now is reading from Mark Klein's important document, AT&T's Implementation of NSA Spying on American Citizens, that he wrote in January of 2004. And then in December 31st, 2005, he allowed it to be published. It was printed on Wired. TheWire.com, and he's been in discussions with investigative reporter Ryan Singel, who also through an anonymous source was able to gather other documents related to the case against AT&T and Verizon and the other telecommunications company, and Singel for Wired has been writing about this important subject. We have to remember that the NSA for many, many years has been monitoring with its supercomputers all telephone calls and faxes that are going overseas. And now, with cooperation of the telecommunications companies, it is able to monitor the internet communication. And consequently, what it does through this device that he's talking about, the NARIS device, is tapping into the ISP, that's your internet service provider. That's why the linkage with the telephone companies and the internet service providers, it's able to tap in so that it can record to whom you are sending an email message, and it looks at the subject line. And these supercomputers then look at keyword index. In other words, if you mention certain words, it goes bing, essentially, and it notes that email for later review by the NSA analysts. Ralph?
Well, Maya, we have here a reference to the Network Operations Center. And indeed, it refers to a network operations center from San Francisco, but to Bridgeton, Missouri, which controls all WorldNet operations, showing that government spying goes hand in hand with what? with quote-unquote union busting. The entire CWA Local 6377, which had jurisdiction over Bridgetown NOC, was wiped out in 2002. AT&T fired the union workforce and rehired them as non-union management employees.
I think we have to thank Mark Klein for his mentioning this in his document and his support of the unionization of AT&T. It's very important with the breakup of AT&T originally into the regional Baby Bells. The first thing that happened was the attempt to eliminate CWA as the representative of the AT&T workers.
Well, he elaborates with this union busting. The cut-in and test procedure document of January 24, 2003, and the diagrams of AT&T's core network circuits, which are to be run through the splitter cabinet we were describing above, brothers and sisters. It lists the identification of what they call peering links, the cut-ins, including Conexion, Vero, Exogen, Genuity, QWest, Pikes, Allegiance, AboveNet, Global Crossing, CNW, UUNet, Level 3, Sprint, Telia, PSINet, and May West. May West is one of the two key internet nodal points in the United States. The other is in Vienna, Virginia. It's not just
May West is in Vienna, Virginia.
The other May West is in Vienna, Virginia, Maya. It's not just WorldNet who are being spied on, as the document states. It's the entire internet. Now, what the next logical question, the document states, is what is the central command collecting this data sent by these multiplying and metastasizing secret rooms? The answer was inadvertently given by the Department of Defense Inspector General's report for testing TIA capabilities and DARPA and the U.S. Army Intelligence and Security Command, INSCOM, there's an operational research and development mode. The main node of TIA is at INSCOM in Fort Belvoir, Virginia. What are the agencies planning and participating in this apparatus? The National Security Agency, the Defense Intelligence Agency, the Central Intelligence Agency, the Department of Defense Counterintelligence Field Activity, the United States Strategic Command, the Special Operations Command, the Joint Forces Command, the Joint Warfare Analysis Command, and the Federal Bureau of Investigation and other federal intelligence agencies. What is the conclusion of this suppressed report? This is the infrastructure of the Orwellian police state. It must be shut down, quote unquote. This is what they're suppressing, brothers and sisters. This is what Barack Obama has signed on to legitimize and to prevent us from addressing. This is the apparatus of the totalitarian state to which Barack Obama and the Democratic Party is a facilitator, an enabler, and indeed a preparer for its further expanded use.
Ralph, I want to sum up that we've been reading from a document written by Mark Klein, a retired AT&T engineer who stepped forward with the technical documents at the heart of the anti-wiretapping case against AT&T. Wired.com obtained this and other documents through the investigative work of Ryan Singel and published them in 2006, in May of 2006. The documents that were made available on Wired News consisted of 30 pages, including the affidavit attributed to Klein, 8 pages of AT&T documents marked proprietary, several pages of news clippings, and other public information related to government surveillance issues. And they state that the AT&T documents appear to be excerpted from material that was later filed in the lawsuit that's under seal. They contacted independent security experts, and they found out that they pose no danger to AT&T, and so that they could publish them without any lawsuit against Wired.com. Wired.com was trying to join the lawsuit with the Electronic Freedom Foundation, the prime plaintiff in the suit against AT&T. The San Francisco Chronicle has joined the suit, the Los Angeles Times, the San Jose Mercury News, Associated Press, and Bloomberg. This is a major lawsuit of our times. And what has now gone on in Congress is to make these telecommunications agencies immune. In other words, the government, our lawmakers, the Congress, is saying that it is okay for not only the telecommunications companies, but for any company and any individual to collaborate with the government in illegal activities that go against the basic Bill of Rights. Well,
there's an interesting analysis by Robert Parry on June 22nd. No one is safe. FISA is only the prelude to the nightmare. And going through what we've been detailing this program, he asks a very pertinent question. Why did Barack Obama stay silent, and why did he finally offer a support response to this bill? The answer is simple. Barack Obama and those who back him see him as the next president of the United States. As president, he will be in the same position as George W. Bush. They want for him all the power he needs. He will be the beneficiary of a Democratic-controlled Congress, and he will deploy this executive authority to institute internal checks that will indeed maximize his power and immunize him against scrutiny. The first part not only alters FISA by expanding the executive's ability to wire and engage, but it authorizes searches of communications on a scale that has not been even attempted by George Bush. The FISA court not just circumvents the Fourth Amendment, it is indeed this whole process a means of scuttling all such protections. And then there's a follow-up piece which Robert Parry calls Democrats Legalize Bush's Crimes, in which he delineates how Nancy Pelosi attempts to sell this as a compromise, but in fact, in the guise of rejecting Bush, they have embraced the theory of the all-power presidency above the law and cleared the way for the president to evade punishment for defying the law. So it isn't just a question of Bush and his team, who supposedly don't understand the old law's language and simply believe they could violate the law without consequence. No, this is an enshrining of this doctrine. After the New York Times revealed the warrantless wiretaps 2.5 years ago, Congress took no steps to hold Bush accountable. The Democratic Congress indeed declared any impeachment consideration was off the table. The Democratic-controlled Congress stampeded into law the Protect America Act, which legalized retroactively what Bush had already done and now has expanded his spying powers even more. In short, the Protect America Act makes warrantless surveillance cost-free and indeed tilts the scales ever further in favor of the government's spying powers. It is called a spying blank check, and that is the instrument that the Democratic Party and that Barack Obama has sanctioned, has embraced, and has indeed ensured the continued politics of the executive authority in this country.
Ralph, to sum up, on Friday, June 20th, the Democratic-controlled House of Representatives passed by 293 to 129 with near unanimous support from Republicans. There were 188 Republicans voting for and one Republican against. It voted to the continuation of the 1978 FISA Act, but it extended it. It extended the wiretapping privileges of the government. And let's look at the two key features of what this extension of FISA does. And this is an act that will expire only at the end of 2012 unless Congress renews it, and it, in probability it shall. It allows broad warrants on large groups of foreign targets. That is, the National Security Administration can have broad warrants from the FISA court to eavesdrop on large group of foreign targets at once. That is, not just individuals, but vague listings of foreign groups and on full extent of wiretapping. Excuse me. For U.S. citizens, the targeting and wiretapping can take place. They do need a warrant, but before they have to go for their warrant, they can say that there are exigent or emergency circumstances, and they can wiretap without a court order for at least 7 days. All the government has to assert is, quote, that they are looking for intelligence important to the national security of the United States, which may be lost. Also important in this new bill that has been passed by the House of Representatives and goes before the Senate on July 8th, and so far the Senate has shown that it's going to pass it, including the support of Barack Obama, the senator from Illinois, who was the Democratic Party candidate for president. And this includes immunity for the telecommunications companies, internet providers, that have collaborated with the government in assisting its search of email and internet examination, you know, the internet sites that people visit, but particularly the emails that people send outside the United States. There are 40 lawsuits now pending. Judge Vaughn Walker of the California Northern District will have to review the paperwork provided by the government, and all the government has to show is that it asked these telecommunications companies to cooperate with the government in the internet search. Ralph.
Glenn Greenwald in Salon addressed the meaning of this, and in particular the embrace by The Nation magazine and by NSMDC's main Obama promoter, Keith Olbermann, of this entire process. It's important to make clear that Keith Olbermann, the MSNBC point man, had once and last January denounced these telecommunications immunity processes as, quote, textbook fascism, immunizing corporate criminals, and indeed showing the coalescence between the corporate apparatus and the fascist state. That's Keith Olbermann. Now that Obama has supported it, he's reversed himself and embraced it as an important compromise and immunizing Obama against the charge of being weak on security. Well, Greenwald responds as follows. George Bush's powers are courtesy of the Democratic Congress. It's worse than expected. It's actually hard to believe that this Congress is making this into law. The same Congress that abolished habeas corpus with the Military Commissions Act and legalized Bush's warrantless eavesdropping program with the Protect America Act. But so it shouldn't be hard to believe at all. Seeing the words in print adds a new dimension to appreciating just how corrupt and repugnant is this Democratic Party and this Congress. He states, civil action may not lie or be maintained in a federal or state court against any person for providing assistance to an element of the intelligence community and shall be properly dismissed. That is the meaning of this. If the Attorney General certifies to the District Court of the United States that, in which any legal action against the violation of rights is pending, that may be dismissed without any acknowledgement of what, in fact, the issues were, without any entitlement on the part of the people who are filing the lawsuit to be aware or be informed about what was the content of the spying upon them and what was in store for them as a consequence. In connection with intelligence activity involving communications authorized by the president during the period beginning on September 11, 2001, designed to prevent or detect terrorist attacks or activities in preparation for a terrorist attack, nothing may be disclosed to anyone who chooses to seek legal remedy to protect their rights, to find out what is being done against them, or to challenge the arbitrary authority. We will have a new law based upon the present premise that the president has the power to order private actors to break the law, and when he issues such an order, that the private actors are protected from liability of any kind on the ground that the leader told them to do it. This is the theory that the Nuremberg trials rejected. And indeed, Maya, on June 19th, Taylor Marsh continues Glenn Greenwald's thesis in his article, Democrats Cave on FISA, and he quotes a Democratic Senator, Russ Feingold, who stood outside this capitulation. Feingold states, The FISA deal is not a compromise. It's a capitulation. The House and Senate should not be taking up this bill because it guarantees immunity for companies that are engaged in illegality, which follow dictatorial rules. It allows the courts to review the question of immunity in a meaningless way. Under this bill, the government will sweep up and keep international communications in the United States with no connection to any suspected terrorists, with no safeguards to protect against abuse of power from any challenge. And he states the Democrats are not standing up to a flawed and dangerous policy of this administration. But it is not of this administration, brothers and sisters. It is the embrace of the totalitarian state. Mumia Abu-Jamal, in a very eloquent article on the 21st of June, calling it the Crimes of Kings, said the following. There is an adage in Anglo-American law that says the king can do no wrong. It is a reflection of the power of kings stemming from the conquest of Britain by William the Conqueror in 1066. It remains in American law under the doctrine called sovereign immunity, which protects the government from suit by its citizens. But beyond the law, there is the practice of politicians bowing to the power of the dictatorial president. That is what Richard Nixon did in Watergate. That is what Richard Nixon stated when meant when he stated, when the president does it, that makes it legal. That was the predicate for the impeachment of Nixon. But in none of these current cases are presidents charged for violating the laws. Indeed, of course, as soon as Nixon was threatened with impeachment, Gerald Ford issued a pardon before any of the charges were actually made, as Mumia Abu-Jamal points out. From secret prisons to legalized torture, from renditions abroad to wiretaps at home, from illegal wars to ruinous occupations, from crimes against the people of the United States, from preparations for the incarceration and the detention of masses of our people, brothers and sisters, that's what we're looking at here. Well, he says, says Mumia Abu-Jamal, well, this is what we have. A billion-dollar corporation and a president. That's the authority in this country. That's the meaning of the capitulation of the Democratic Party. That is the crime of kings. That is the totalitarian state of which harbinger is none other than Barack Obama.
Ralph, we have seen over the past several years government given blank authority to look into financial records of citizens without anyone knowing. In other words, it's illegal for your banking institution or other financial institution to inform you that there has been a government warrant to investigate your private financial information. We have seen with the HIPAA Act, the supposed Privacy Act over medical records, there is a provision within it, and you must sign a HIPAA Act when you go to the doctor. The HIPAA Privacy Act has a provision that states a government agency can get your medical records straight from the doctor or straight from your health insurance carrier. And now we have immunity, Congress giving immunity to the telecommunications agency for monitoring your internet, your email communications. We have further deepening of the totalitarian state, and this has been supported by Senator Barack Obama, who says that he is promoting change. What is the change? The change is the embracing of the totalitarian state. Ralph, in conclusion?
Well, Maya, I want to conclude, if you like, by referencing an important article in the World Socialist website, Populism and Plutocracy, Barack Obama Speaks to the Wall Street Journal. Because although this refers back to our last program on the servicing of finance and corporate capital, it summarizes the capitulation and the embrace of the capitulation to and the embrace of the totalitarian state. Because what we have here in Senator Obama's interview with the Wall Street Journal is an acknowledgement that his main task, his main job, is to reconcile the public to even greater hardships in the immediate future. Obama invokes rising corporate profits and flatlining and declining wages and incomes for the average family. But then he says that it is important to pay attention to how to address these questions. He will rely on business-friendly cuts to corporations, and he says, give them a little health care so that you have a more flexible workforce that makes workers more mobile and less resistant to change. So, in fact, in this extraordinary statement to the Wall Street Journal, he presents himself as the advocate, not of working people, but as the advisor to the corporate oligarchy, explaining the techniques necessary to make workers, as he put it, more mobile and less resistant to change. And what does he mean by change? Reconciling them to their absence of sufficient income and to their loss of jobs and to the sweatshopization of the economy. The totalitarian state is in place and embraced for a very simple reason. There is a crisis of a system. There is an all-out assault upon the mass of our people. It is a system in terminal decay, and it requires a facade, a Barack Obama, an embrace of the capitalist state, and above all, the embrace of the totalitarian mechanisms for imposing it.
This has been Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. Our program today, Barack Obama, Embracing the Totalitarian State, will be on our website, www.takingaimradio.com, along with the other programs in this series. We'll be with you next week, and please contact us at takingaim@patbell.net. That's PACBELL.net. Biki biki no biniye, tazim tazim.